Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 13 of the Today's Knuckleball Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by FanRag Sports. As usual, I am Timothy King, your host, and I am with Greg Jewett. Greg, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good. And we've got a special guest tonight from the Fantasy Fix and Razzball. That's Seth Klein. Seth, what's going on, man?
How's it going, guys? I'm doing well.
Good, good. Glad to have you on. If you're not familiar with Seth, go follow him on Twitter at SethDaSportsman. He is one of the better Twitter followers for fantasy, not just baseball either. He does it all. He's up. You're up late. You're up all hours of the night. I see you on there answering questions, Seth, huh?
Yeah, I don't sleep very much.
I prefer to
work late at night and get more done then.
So if you have like 4 a.m. fantasy baseball questions for Seth, be sure to hit him up on Twitter and he's always available. So, well, let's get right into it. We've got a lot going on right now. We've got Alex Rodriguez is 2 hits away, last I checked, from the 3,000 hits. We've got Matt Latos pitching at Yankee Stadium right now. Do either one of you guys know how his velocity has been tonight?
Are you talking about Latos?
Yeah.
How's he doing? He's pitching okay. Gave up a run in the first, I believe. It's 1-0. Yeah, it's 1-0. He's in the third.
Is he letting up that gun?
By Tapia.
Is he throwing hard?
I haven't been watching. I've been doing stuff around the house, so just kind of checking on the computer. But Sabathia's throwing a no hitter.
Third. Oh god. Well, a big thing we were looking at. I know Greg especially. Greg wrote about it for the site this week about Matt Latos and. He came back last week, obviously struck out the 11 guys there in his first start back off the DL and was hitting 96 on the radar gun. So I'm interested to see, you know, regardless of the results, if Latos is, you know, hitting 93, 94 on that gun, that's going to be good news. And I know we talked about it on Twitter as well, Seth. But so let's start off with a little baseball buzz here and a little non-fantasy stuff. Greg, I'll start with you. What do you think's going on with the whole – Astros Cardinals situation? What do you think of that?
It's hard to read at this point because there's not a whole lot of information out there, but it's pretty apparent that the Cardinals were looking over information from Houston. So you don't know if it was just the scouting department trying to get a head start on people, or if they were just seeing what the Astros are doing and maybe trying to figure out how they can improve theirs, but there's a lot of circumspect here.
Seth, what's your read on it?
I'm waiting to hear more information. I think we can always jump to conclusions. Obviously, there's some basis for something because I don't think they would have brought this to light if there wasn't something going on, but it should be interesting to see because, you know, the reports last year that the Astros sort of not quite did the same thing, but they were, you know, they found out, well, not they, but they found out they were leaked. Some of their information was leaked, and all the teams around the league found out who they were offering in trades, and some of them were like, almost like classic fantasy baseball low ball trades, you know, like they're offering Matt Dominguez for Giancarlo Stanton or something like that. It was pretty funny to see, but Astros have certainly turned it around, so they've made up for that.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly when the hacking took place, as far as I know, but imagine that. Imagine a world we live in now where people want to know what the Astros are doing. 5 years ago, nobody wanted to know what they were doing. So definitely tells you how the tides have turned and how the Astros have rebuilt that franchise, definitely, from the ground up. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's it'd be wise to wait till more information comes out and stuff. And, you know, if the FBI is involved, it's pretty legitimate. But Yeah, it's kind of the equivalent of like logging into your buddy's account to see what kind of trades he's offering other people. I get it. So, all right, let's move on to some fantasy stuff here because that's what people are looking for. I wrote a column this week, just kind of a see where we're at with Garrett Richards, Tyson Ross, and Gio Gonzalez. And I know we talked a little bit about Gio Gonzalez on Twitter this week, you guys. But where are you at on Garrett Richards and Tyson Ross, Seth, as far as, you know, potential rebounds with those guys?
You asked me?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, sorry. I mean, it looks like he's been turning around the last couple starts. You know, not an arm injury that he was coming off of, but anytime you come off of a serious injury, there's always a chance for a slow start. His control needs to get a little bit better. We've seen that the strikeouts aren't what they were last year, but that can improve. I've liked him preseason. I've liked him all season. I thought he was a steal in some drafts because, you know, people for whatever reason tend to not draft guys even if they're only scheduled to miss a couple weeks of the season. So far he's doing well for fantasy owners that took a chance on him.
Greg, where are you at with Richards?
Yeah, I having had knee surgeries myself, it takes time. As much as you think you're healthy, you still have to trust your body. So I think he's still feeling himself a little through that process. But as the season goes on and the knee holds up and he has faith in it, I think his numbers will turn around. I think there's room for him to improve.
Yeah, no, I think we're definitely going to see some improvement. I think, you know, we tend to underestimate injuries in that, you know, we kind of like, oh, well, you know, the return date is X, so, you know, when player comes back on date X, you know, player is 100% healthy and, you know, player will just continue to do everything they did before injury. And, you know, that's very rarely the case, if ever. But one thing I noticed with Richards is that his swinging strike rate is up from last year, but obviously the strikeouts are down. So I expect the strikeouts to come back up. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a strikeout boon here in the near future to kind of get those ratios back in order. But, you know, I think his velocity is down a touch too, and I think that could just be a product of the knee injury and kind of maybe the conditioning, since he wasn't able to kind of have a normal spring training like the rest of the guys. So, yeah, Richards is one of my buy low guys right now. I think if you can get him for 80 cents on the dollar, I think you do it, because I think as the season goes on, he'll kind of find himself. So Tyson Ross, Greg, you dropped him in our league, our site league we play, and I scooped him up today after looking at him a little bit. He's got if you look at what he's doing, his swing strike rate is ridiculous, like 13-point-something%, and he's getting a ridiculous amount of ground balls and the victim of a 370 BABIP. The only thing I see wrong with Ross is that he's walking a ton of guys.
I'm just frustrated with the walks, and in that league that we're in, walks hurt. They count against you. So I kept waiting for him to turn it around, and, you know, it's not like that's a deep league and it's not a money league, so I just figured I would just go a different direction. So, you know, it's nothing personal against Ross. In a money league, I obviously wouldn't be dropping him. But, yeah, just frustrated. But, you know, his FIP says he should be doing better, but the walks really concern me. He's throwing a lot of sliders this year. His percentage of sliders is up, so, you know, that accounts for a little bit of the swinging strike rate. But, you know, it doesn't matter if he's going to strike out 8 or 9 a game, but he's only going into the fifth inning. I mean, a lot of his starts, he's not even getting into the sixth because he's getting in such high pitch counts with all of those walks. It really makes it hard for him to get wins because he's not in a game long enough.
Yeah, 47% sliders, and that obviously has a lot to do with both the swing strike and the walk rate. So I don't know if he can continue. I don't even know if that's sustainable, but it's something to watch, because if he throws less of them, he might go deeper into games. The striker has to come down, but the walks will diminish as a result. Are you on the same boat with us on Tyson Ross, Seth?
Yeah, I still have faith in Tyson Ross. Like you guys said, the strikeouts are there. I mean, they're better than they were last season. Just, again, he's given up a lot of walks. I expect everything to sort of normalize once all those things get back to their norms. But yeah, I think he's a really good buy low. I was actually in one league where he was dropped. So people are getting frustrated. San Diego's not winning games. It's certainly a good time to make an offer for him.
I'm with you. Seth, well, let's go back to you on Gio Gonzalez. Is he a buy low for you?
Yeah, I like Gio too. I mean, look, we're talking about guys that, well, Ross is a little less. Ross and Richards haven't been in the league as long, but Gio's been around for a while. He's been just getting bad luck, bad BABIP, bad FIP. His ERA is inflated because of a few, you know, three or four starts where he gave up a ton of runs. He's throwing too many pitches right now, and that's the problem. The defense isn't helping him out, and he's getting to not be pitches by the fourth, fifth inning. It hasn't really gone deep in games. But, again, so if you look at those BABIP numbers and the defense behind him, things should turn around. Strikeouts are there. I think he's a good buy low. He's on a good team. I just think he's had some bad luck so far.
Greg, where are you at with Gio?
Yeah, I have him in my home keeper league, so I'm hoping he turns it around. I mean, his second half last year I thought was something he was really going to build on, but he struggled a little bit here, obviously, at the beginning of the season, but I'm hoping he can refine that. But I think Seth touched upon a good point there. It's hard when you don't trust your defense, because then you try so much harder to pitch better. I mean, Ian Desmond's just having one of the worst free agent walk years that you can imagine, not only with the bat, but with his glove as well. So it's hampering his pitchers.
Okay. Seth, if you're ranking those three pitchers for the rest of the season, go ahead and give us a ranking on them. Like, who would you rather have the most, to the least? Seth, are you there?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. You cut out.
Could you rank those guys for me, those guys we just talked about?
Including Latos?
Not without Latos. But, yeah, throw
okay.
Latos.
Rest of season, I will say Richards, Ross, Gonzalez.
How about you, Greg?
I'm with Richards as well, but I'll go Gio, then Ross.
Wow, I'm going to go Richards, Ross, and Gio. And if we're going to add Latos in there, Seth, where do you put him?
I'd put Latos probably at the bottom there.
Greg?
Well, I'll stick by my gut there. I'll have Latos ahead of Ross, but not near Richards. I think Richards is kind of clear ahead in this one.
I agree. Okay. So we don't have to go too much in on Latos. If he does anything awesome, I have the game on MLB TV. If I see him light up if I see him throw a 96 mile off pitch, I'll give an update here. So let's talk about some rookies, notably Joey Gallo, Carlos Correa, Byron Buxton, and we'll start with Gallo, I guess. Greg, what are you seeing from him? As far as, do you think he sticks around even when Beltre comes back? You know, he's been getting some reps there in the outfield. Basically my question is, has Gallo done enough if Josh Hamilton and Adrian Beltre were suddenly healthy? Would he have a spot up with the big club?
It depends. They're saying the last report I saw says Hamilton should be back around July 4th weekend. He's kind of on pace to return there, which oddly enough would be when they're hosting the Angels. So, you know, take that for what you want. But I think Gallo has done enough to say that he could stay. And he did work in left field in the minors because the Rangers were trying to find a way to get his bat into the lineup with Adrian Beltre still in the majors. So it's been really quiet on the Beltre front. So I don't know what his timetable is going to be, but every week that goes by and it's kind of quiet, that's just another week that Gallo is going to be around. I think Gallo's been as advertised. You know, he's going to hit some home runs, he'll take some walks, and he's going to strike out. You know, Ray Flowers was really banging on Gallo when he started out with all those strikeouts, but, you know, I think that's to be expected. And, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, you know, you called the home run last night, so kudos on that on Twitter. You know, it's one thing to say you might hit a home run, it's another to put it in writing and then follow through with it. You know, hitting that home run off of Kershaw, that's nice. You know, I mean, you know, Kershaw obviously made a mistake, but he still had the gut, you know, the bat control to hit it out of the ballpark. So, you know, is he more than a 250 hitter? Absolutely not. You know, he's probably going to be a 240, 230. But if he's hitting the home runs and he's getting on base with the walks, that's still valuable to Texas.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Gallo's actually shown me more than I expected. Considering he, you know, we knew he was going to come up and have a 30-plus percent strikeout rate, I thought, you know, there was going to be maybe some even deeper struggles than we've seen. But he's got a couple steals, and he's hitting home runs off Clayton Kershaw, and, you know, he's definitely pleasantly surprised me. Seth, where are you at on Gallo?
He's really impressed me so far. We knew the power numbers were going to, you know, I mean, he had the potential for big power numbers. I wasn't sure if he'd be able to stick around when he got called up, but the way he's been hitting, I think they have to keep him up somehow. You know, it's going to be tough because the Rangers are playing really well, and they're hitting well, and when they get Hamilton back and Beltre back, there really isn't going to be a starting spot, possibly platoon with maybe Chu and Martin, but I don't think they keep Chu out of the lineup very much. Moreland's been playing well, so they can't keep him out. We'll see what happens, but maybe they make a trade. But like Greg said, I don't think Beltre seems like he's very close to returning. So Gallo will get, I think, possibly to the All-Star break or a little bit before to keep showing that he deserves to be up there.
Yeah, what a great problem to have, huh? You got too many bats, and you know, especially with Hamilton and his situation, and you know, Beltre's slow ways of healing. The last thing I read on Beltre was that he was, you know, just got the stitches removed, and that it was just a really slow going process with his thumb. So, I think these things have a way of working themselves out. And I mean, if Gallo continues to hit, you know, home runs every other night, he's going to be in that lineup. So. Like I said, the situation will work itself out one way or another. Definitely the Rangers have been playing good ball, and it's a nice problem for them to have for sure. Carlos Correa had three steals today, has three home runs already. Greg made a funny tweet about Correa. He's playing. He played nine games, has more home runs than Robinson Cano does all season. I thought that was pretty funny. But, yeah, Correa's up, and he's hitting, and, you know, it seems like just another level for Correa. No struggles, really. He's up. Not walking. He only has, like, one walk, I think, as far as I know. But he's hitting the ball well, and, you know, he looks pretty good. Seth, what do you think about Correa? The real deal right out of the gate?
Yeah, he is. He's just looked great. Only 20 years old, but playing like a man out there, and got speed, power, defense. I saw him make a really nice play. I think it was yesterday, the day before, at short. He's the real deal. Fantasy-wise, I think the guy is good. I think you're going to talk about him being a number two or three shortstop next year. I don't know if I guess with the stolen bases, you can bump him up maybe, but I still think Tulowitzki, healthy, is the best fantasy shortstop, but you got to make a case for Correa number two or three, and it's really unbelievable with these youngsters. I was tweeting about it yesterday, and I've never seen really so much success so quickly from call-ups with Bryant and Correa and Gallo and Peterson, and it's just great to see. I like the youth. I like the excitement, and it's nice to see that these teams aren't afraid to say, screw the Super 2, we're calling these guys up, and we're going to have them contribute right now.
Greg, what do you think about Correa?
Well, I'm still trying to decide between him and Springer for my jersey, although I am leaning Springer. But, you know, I think it's somebody was tweeting out earlier that this is the first time a 20-year-old has, in his first 10 games, has 3 home runs and 4 stolen bases. 2 walks versus 11 strikeouts is a bit of a concern, but you know he's going to strike out adjusting to this level, especially since he lost pretty much all of last year with the broken leg. So, you know, the fact that he's come up and done this, you know, and Buxton's almost in the same exact boat, but he's gone off to a little bit more rough start. So, you know, Correa has just gone far beyond any of my expectations. You know, you and I have talked, and I had him in my home keeper league, and the same thing with Gallo. So the first week I'm like, well, you know what, I'm going to put Gallo in because if I don't, I'm going to kick myself in the ass if he has a hot week. And he's been on my lineup ever since. And the same with Correa. He came up, and I was like, well, I bet Jung Ho Kong and, you know, Flores has been playing okay. But I was like, if I don't put Correa in, and same thing, if he gets off to a hot start, I'm going to get angry at myself, and same deal. So those two guys, I've already gained, like, 2 places in the standings. I mean, it's not just because of them solely, but I was in, like, 6th. A while back, but I'm already up in the 2nd now, and I'm closing in on 1st pretty quick. So, you know, the youth is having an effect, especially in fantasy. And like Seth was saying, you know, rookies come up and sometimes they do good and then they kind of flame out. But this year's crop just seems like the next wave is coming, and it couldn't come at a better time for baseball, especially the way veterans have been aging this year. To have this this crop of youth come up and really get the game reinvigorated is awesome.
Agreed on all accounts. And since I have been not only following fantasy, but I've been a baseball fan my whole life, and I can't ever remember a year where so much young talent has come up, and not only come up, but made this big of an impact. It's remarkable. It's absolutely ridiculous, really, what these young players are doing. And, you know, immediately seeing these guys come up and do this stuff has just been special. Do you guys think Correa is a top 5 shortstop this year?
I think he could be for the second half.
How about you, Seth?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Certainly in the top 10. It's like no question with that. All right, moving on to another probably, maybe, depending on where you're looking, baseball's top prospect, Byron Buxton, Mike Trout comparisons throughout his, you know, his minor league days. You know, unlike Gallo and Correa, though, Buxton has gotten off to a relatively slow start, except for a stand-up triple that I'm sure you guys saw. He's 2-for-16 to start his big league career, and he's hitting out of the 9-hole in Minnesota, which, you know, if you're asking me, I don't know why that is, but nevertheless, Buxton's up. You know, he's here to stay. He's going to get playing time while he's here. What do you guys think about Buxton? Do you think maybe he was rushed, Greg? What do you think?
Well, the one thing that Correa had on him is he got some time, at least in AAA, and not that that's the sole difference. But Buxton started this year slow, and like I said, they both missed all of last year with injury issues. So, you know, I think the home ballpark does help Correa a little bit. And, you know, they started him out 6th. They've already had him up to 2nd with the injury to Altuve. You know, I just think Correa right now is a little bit more polished. But I think Buxton will turn it around. He's just going to have one of these times, whether it's this weekend or coming up soon, he's going to run into a hot weekend. And then we're like, okay, there's Byron Buxton. I think once he gets a couple and stops pressing, that things will come together for him, especially if he can get on base and use his wheels.
Are you as optimistic as Greg is, Seth?
Not quite, actually. Buxton you know, is an exciting player, and he's going to be a really, really good player. As far as all these rookies that got called up, he was the one I wasn't going crazy for. I mean, I think he'll improve. He can't do any worse, really, but I wasn't like I saw some crazy bids in some leagues and I knew they were going to be crazy. I didn't even bother bidding in some leagues just because I didn't want to spend the money on a guy that quite possibly, I mean, if he struggles enough, could be sent back down. His plate discipline just isn't there yet. And like Greg said, he didn't go to AAA. He wasn't overly amazing in Double A, and he was injured all of last year. He's has right, you know, so far this season he's played 5 games and he has no walks, and so there's going to be some. He has 6 strikeouts as well. So the speed's there. We saw that on that triple. We've seen in the minor league clips, but if you own him in a redraft league, maybe it's time to sell right now on the hype. Obviously, in a keeper league, I think the guy's going to be amazing, but I'm not as high on him as the others this year.
I agree. I'm with you there. I'm a little less optimistic than Greg is, I think, too. But, you know, he kind of paints a picture to me as a guy that's not quite ready. And I think Greg made a perfect point when he said, you know, that Buxton's probably not quite as polished as Correa is. And I think that's pretty obvious. And of these 3 guys, I think Buxton probably, if he doesn't get it together, I mean, it's been a week, but, you know, I was surprised that they called him up so soon, and I know a lot of other people were too. So hopefully he gets it together here. Hopefully, like Greg said, hopefully he runs into a couple hot games here and he can kind of take a breath of air and kind of get things going. But I'd like to see him, you know, get a couple of hits in a game and get moved up in the order. It's kind of crappy watching him get penciled in for 9th there, but. You know, going to be exciting, and, you know, anybody who's getting compared to Mike Trout anyway is definitely a guy who you want to own. And obviously in keeper leagues, he's, a valuable, valuable asset.
Well, if he's truly like Trout, I mean, Trout really struggled in his debut. He had to come back down, and it wasn't until his second time up that he really took off.
That's right. Yeah. People do forget about that. So, a favorite of mine is Steven Souza, and he's such a great player to watch. He's a fun player to watch, and he's an interesting player because you kind of look at what he does, and nobody else is kind of doing it like this. You talk about the 3 true outcome guys, and you look at, you know, Chris Davis and Chris Carter, and you're kind of been playing for a little bit here, Adam Dunn, but none of those guys had speed. So Souza is up to 13 homers, 8 steals. Pretty obvious that he's going to go 20-20 here this year. We're only in June. Seth, what do you think about Steven Souza, just generally?
I was really high on Souza coming into the season. He was one of my late-round draft guys. I like the speed-power combo. A little bit older when you're talking about rookies. Technically, I mean, he's going to be 27 next year, so he sort of a career minor leaguer up until now, but was a big part of that trade. I think it was the Will Myers trade, and he's performing, and he's, like you said, the 3 outcomes. It's very similar to Jock Peterson as well. You either walk, you strike out, or you hit a home run, and he's got a lot of steals, even though Peterson hasn't really been stealing bases here. We know he can. I mean, it's 33% strikeout rate, but also the 12% walk rate. I mean, a 12% walk rate is incredible for a rookie. And like I said, he's a little bit older, but that's just incredible right there. He's hitting for power. He's playing every day. This guy is going to be probably a top 25 guy by the end of the season.
Greg?
Well, you know, I like Souza when we were together at the old site. So, I mean, you know, he was very good when I saw him play in Syracuse. Always he plays hard, which is something that I appreciate. You know, so I got to watch him play here some in AAA. And, you know, I'm glad to see him kind of shedding the quad A label. But, you know, and he's streaky, and that's reflected in his batting average. So when he's hot, you know, he's filling up the stat sheet for you. But then there's going to be some valleys. But you're going to take it right now. He's, according to Zips, he's on pace for a 24 home run, 18 stolen base season. You know, if he can get his average up into the 230 range, you absolutely take that in this day and age of lacking offense. You know, you can take one guy with a batting average hit as long as you got somebody else on the team to balance them out.
So in 57% of Souza's plate appearances, he is producing one of those 3 outcomes. He is 23rd in baseball in average fly ball distance. And that's including the home run he hit off Jordan Zimmerman last night, which is an absolute bomb. And he all of his home runs this year have been cannons. I mean, he's not hitting wall scrapers here either. And you know, everybody knows about what he did, you know, in the minor leagues last year, and you know, he's got a pretty good story. And like Seth mentioned, he's walking at an unprecedented rate for a rookie, and that makes up for the fact that he's going to strike out. He is going to strike out. A lot of the projections in the off season were talking about how, you know, oh well, if Souza hits 250, you know, he can be a viable mixed league player. I don't think that's going to happen. I would be surprised if he hit like 235 even, considering where he's at right now. I think what he's done so far is pretty much what he's going to do moving forward here. And I think, you know, I think you've got to be okay with that. You know, so one comparison though that I want to make is, do you guys remember when Chris Young, who was with the Diamondbacks, do you remember like those three seasons he had where he was like a 230, mm-hmm. 25 guy? I think, and you know, with the big walk rate and the huge strikeout rate, I'm pretty sure that's what Steven Souza is this year. So Chris Young was a top 30 outfielder in those three seasons, and, you know, looking pretty clear that Steven Souza is going to be just like that this year. So why do you think it's just the glaring batting average is the reason why he's under 50% on ESPN leagues, Craig?
Yeah, I think it's because people, unlike Seth and you, they had unrealistic. They were thinking about that 250 batting average, and they had the 25-25 dancing in their head. And then when he got into that valley that he had, they dropped him and moved on. And even though he responded well to it and came back out of it, I think his owners were, you know, either felt spurned or whatever. You know, we see this all the time, and it's crazy because people say they're always out there chasing saves, but then you look at pitchers like Jake McGee and A.J. Ramos and some of these other guys on the ESPN leagues, their ownerships are below 50%. So it's hard. You don't know how deep or shallow these leagues are, so some of the percentages get a little skewed. But, you know, people forget about them or they move on. And, you know, they go on to the next big thing. So if they drop them and left them there, they're missing out because he's a staff filler.
Seth, is Souza a 10-team guy, 10-team league guy for you?
Yeah, I think definitely. I don't play for average in fantasy much, and I don't really like batting average leagues to begin with. But even if you are, if you can balance it out, it's fine. I mean, talking about a guy that has, you know, 25-20 potential, and to me, that you definitely got to get that in the league, and hopefully, you can get that batting average up to the, you know, maybe a 240 or something like that.
Yeah, 240 would be awesome. That'd be really good. But, yeah, if Souza's out there in your league, and even if you don't need outfield help, you can just stick him somewhere. He's got to be owned. I think he's got to be owned everywhere. And, if your league counts OBP, in addition to or in replace of batting average, Souza is he's a big, big-time producer. So those ownership totals need to go way up as far as I'm concerned, because there's a lot of power speed that's sitting out there on your waiver wire if he's not owned. Let's talk about another outfielder, one that I was not big on going into the season. I don't actually know about you guys, about where you guys are at with him. It's Carlos Gonzalez. He's homered in three straight games, and he has six homers over his last 12 games. Seth, where were you on Gonzalez coming into the season, and where are you now on it?
I wasn't very high on him coming into the season. I liked him if he slipped a little bit in drafts, but I didn't like him where his ADP was. He couldn't be worse than last year. I didn't expect him to be worse. But he's managed to avoid being injured this year, and that's been a key for him. We know he has the talent. We know playing in that ballpark, he can really get a lot of big stats, but he's never been able to stay healthy. This year he is. He's hot right now, and he seems to finally be finding a stroke. We know that guys do take a little bit to get their swing in, and he had off-season surgery. I don't love him the rest of the year. It depends how you value the guy. If you expect him to be putting up MVP numbers or close to it like he had done in the past, then you're going to be upset because he's not. He's not stealing bases. He's not probably going to hit for average. But in that lineup, in that ballpark, the home runs are going to be there, the RBIs are going to be there. he just has to stay on the field, and if he can do so, I think you could see him hit 25 home runs, maybe get that batting average in the high 270s, low 280s, and that would be a nice outcome for him.
Yeah, that's one thing about Cargo. It's always been, you know, the production has been paramount. It's been awesome, but he hasn't been healthy. And this year he's healthy, but to date, I mean, you know, outside of this 12-game stretch, he's been awful. So it's kind of a catch-22. Greg, where are you at with Cargo?
I agree with a lot of what Seth was saying. You know, people were, I thought, reaching a little too early for him in the preseason drafts based on all of the things he was saying, you know, the injuries and you don't know. And it's hard to trust him, you know. He burned me last year, so I had a little recency bias against him. But in that same thing, I did trade a couple people in my home league because he was an expiring contract and I was looking for a little upside in the outfield, so I did trade for him in that league. So at least lately, he's been turning around. That's another part of the reason that team's surging a bit. So, you know, I think being realistic about him, I mean, the stolen bases are not there, and I think you're okay with that because if that keeps him on the field and he's producing, why risk injury trying to steal bases? So, you know, I think the 25 would be a great number for him to get to. I definitely think the 275 batting average is within his reach. But, you know, it's time to dial back the expectations on him a little bit, which isn't a bad thing. It's just, you know, if he's going to stay on the field, this is who he is.
Yeah, and I'm actually surprised. I'm actually really surprised that not that I thought he was going to go the whole season contributing the way he was, but considering, you know, his batted ball stuff and, you know, the way he was kind of, you know, approaching the plate, didn't look like there was going to really be anything in the tank for him this year, honestly. You looked at, you know, kind of his spray charts and, you know, his all the other metrics, and it didn't look good. But, you know, the ground ball rate is coming back down, and that's good. He's hitting some line drives now. And, you know, as he maybe gets acclimated or finds his swing or, you know, whatever, hopefully those things continue to normalize. But for the people who have Cargo, pretty big time for them, considering, you know, they've been sitting on a player, you know, probably benching him on a player who hasn't done anything all year, and now you're inserting a guy into your lineup who's hitting a home run every other day. So, you know, if you did hold on to Cargo, congratulations. But would you guys take – I'll start with you, Seth. Would you take the opportunity, you know, this hot streak to sell high on him, or would you kind of hold tight and see what he's going to do for you? Seth, did you get that one? Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Sorry.
Did you get that question, Seth?
No, I didn't hear it.
So would you take the opportunity right now to, you know, this hot streak to sell high on Cargo, or would you hold on to him?
To sell high on him?
Yeah, would you hold on to him?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you're going to get from him. I think he's a player that's always worth selling high on because of his injury history and because he could be streaky. We see that with a lot of the Colorado players. When they're at home, they do well. And then when they go on the road, they can go in a big slump. If you can get good value right now, yeah, for sure. Otherwise, maybe just hold on to him.
Would you rather have Cargo or Steven Sue the rest of the season?
Oh, man. that's a tough one. I'm going to go against my normal train of thought, and I'm going to say Cargo.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to say that is more just because he's a known entity, and
yeah,
we know what he can do. And we don't know. I mean, Sousa's been good, and he had good seasons in the minors, but he could very well hit a rookie slump, rookie wall, and we at least know that when Cargo's playing at home and hopefully when he's not playing against lefties, he can crush the ball, and the injury history's there. But again, we can't predict injuries, and we can't say he will get injured. And I think I like his track record better than Sousa's.
Fair. Greg, are you selling high on Cargo?
I only have one share of them, and I doubt I could sell them in that league. So, no, I'm going to ride it out. You know, I mean, if I had them in a different league and people were offering me something really good for them, depending on the offer, but I wouldn't be averse to it.
by any means, but it all depends on the situation.
Okay, and that league that you own Carlos Gonzalez. Go ahead, Seth.
Oh, I was going to say that I own him in one league as well, and in that league, I don't think I'd trade him either because it's a tough league to trade in, and I think that it would. I don't know if I would get what I wanted, and I actually did. I traded for him about a month ago. I traded Chris Davis for him. So far pretty happy. Davis has been fine, but I was short an outfielder when Ellsbury got hurt, and I went and traded Chris Davis. So it was a nice swap so far.
Yeah, it's a fair deal. Greg, if you were offered Steven Souza for Cargo in that league, would you take it, or would you hold on to Cargo?
Well, see, that's a different animal. That's a keeper league. And Cargo is an expiring contract, so sure I would, but I don't think the
okay.
is going to do that. But, I agree with Seth in the regard that, you know, I trust what Cargo can do the rest of the way. And, I mean, you're gambling with the health, but, you know, no, I'm happy to sit on him and ride him out and see where it goes the rest of the way. That doesn't bother me a bit.
All right, I'm not going to be stubborn and say Souza just because I'm a big fan, but I'll go Cargo as well.
You can.
All right, so, Greg, you wrote we'll have fun with this one, I think. You wrote a column for the site about saves plus holds. Do you want to talk a little bit about that column? And if you haven't read it, go to the site and read that. But talk a little bit about what was in that column, Greg.
Well, it's just because every year, you know, I very much enjoy writing the saves column every week, and it's fun because almost every week I have something to write about, and when I don't, I'll just do a little rankings recap and see where people are at. But, you know, the All-Star game last year, I even think some people were kind of questioning why Pat Neshek was on the team and stuff like that. Not a lot of people question, but Wade Davis also raised some eyebrows. But these have been two of the top relief pitchers in the past calendar year. If you go over those same periods, I mean, Wade Davis has better numbers across the board than Greg Holland for the last 365 days. But because Holland pitches in the ninth inning, people value him in a different manner. And, you know, and Seth and I talked about this on Twitter as well. You know, one of my favorite leagues is a league where we use solds, which is the saves plus holds. And it kind of defrays, you know, rushing to the waiver wire every time an A.J. Ramos or somebody else gets the job because they are either owned in your league already because they're valuable as a holds player or you have people in place. And it would really change drafts, too, because now – You're not reaching for Craig Kimbrel because of his name in the fifth round in a draft. You can wait around and get somebody that has somewhat of the same skill set because he only has 77 strikeouts over the last year when you go from last June to this June. So, you know, there's other pitchers that are doing the same stuff that just don't have that name, and it would change the way leagues are structured a little bit, especially if managers like Joe Maddon and Kevin Cash are going to use multiple people to close games out or at least talk about it, it really holds more weight because now you're making it more like real baseball too. And I think that was kind of the point of fantasy is that you kind of wanted to be like a real GM. So if you're combining those two categories, you're actually being more of a real fantasy player.
Seth, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Greg and I talked about this the other night. This is something I've been a proponent for years. League I commish, I've had saves plus holds as a category for a few years now. I prefer that. I don't like the rush to the wire to get a closer. And like Greg said, draft a closer early because you need those saves. And we know the statistics. We know that almost 60% of the closers are replaced by the end of the season. So it's sort of like this position that unless you do get a few of the top guys, we've seen this year, even like you said, Kimbrel's not doing well. I mean, he's getting saves, but his numbers aren't great. Chapman's had some bumps in the road. Greg Holland hasn't been great. And all of a sudden, all these draft picks you draft, and we get guys like Glenn Perkins, who lead the league in saves. And, you know, it's just a category I don't like. there's a few categories that most people play fantasy baseball. I hate wins. If you follow me on Twitter, you know how much I hate wins. It's in my bio. It's the worst category in fantasy sports. I still don't get how people can defend it. I hate batting average as well. I prefer either OBP as well as slugging or just OPS. I feel like all three of those categories are just, you haven't earned anything to get them. And a win, you can get a win because your team scores 8 runs and you give up 7, but you still get the win. And the same with a save. I mean, your guy can pitch a shutout, 8-inning shutout, and you come in for 3 outs, and that wins you a category. So, or whatever, in your roto standings. I'm not a fan of saves. I like the whole saves plus holds. I agree with Greg. I think it adds a different dimension to the draft. It adds a different dimension to the waiver wire because in leagues that count saves, unless it's like a Wade Davis or a Betances, I know that they've gotten saves recently, but unless it's a couple of those guys that are just get the strikeouts and get the ratios, most of the good middle relief pitchers are left on the wire, and I think it dilutes the league a lot because you end up with all these guys that no one can use. So if you're in a league next year, I would consider, you know, to the listeners, making saves plus holds one of your categories instead of just saves.
I'm with you guys. My big money home keeper league, I've been trying to do this for 4 years now, and I keep getting backlash, and I keep getting, you know, people don't want to change from the norm, and I just, no matter what I do, I can't get them to change it. But in all my other leagues, it's all saves plus holds, and I really like it. It adds another dimension, a real dimension. You know, you guys touched upon that. Just instead of making it, you know, pick up John Axford because somehow he keeps finding, you know, ways to, you know, get saved, and definitely makes it a lot more realistic. And like you said, Seth, I mean, a lot of those other categories, like batting average and the like, you know, you're not earning anything, you know, if, you know, a hit drops in here or there or something, you know, you want to make it more realistic. And I think Greg's right about that point. You know, baseball fans want to be more realistic. So if you are in an old school, like a 5x5 league, you may want to consider, you know, next year trying maybe adding a new wrinkle, and you'd be surprised to see that you'll like it as time goes on. So Billy Burns, a lot of people have been talking about him on Twitter. What do you guys think about him? Do you think he's the real deal here, Seth?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Burns. Doing a lot better than I expected. I expected the speed to be there, but I liked him last year. He didn't really get the opportunity last year. I think hitting a top, as long as he's batting leadoff, which should be for the rest of the season, because I don't really see Coco Chris coming back, and he was terrible when he was playing, and I mean, I think his career could be over. He's going to be batting leadoff for that team, and he's not getting days off. He's playing nearly every single day. In the beginning, when he first came up, Burns, they were sitting him a little bit. I think it was versus lefties, but now he's playing every day and he's scoring runs. He's getting on base. He may not hit another home run the rest of the season, but you're talking about a guy getting runs, hitting for average, stealing bases. I like him the rest of the way. And I don't think that the A's have any intentions of putting him in order or not playing him. I think he's good to go the rest of the season.
Greg?
Yeah, I've long been a Burns fan. You know, he made the switch last year with the bat, and it didn't seem like a big deal, but the heavier bat allows him to get a little more pop on the ball, and he has speed all day long. So I grabbed him in my AL-only FSWA league, and that's been a huge, huge upgrade in my outfield.
Yeah, like Seth said, he's playing every day. He's hitting leadoff. He's been a big spark. He's scoring runs. You know, he's getting on base and he's running. And I think, again, like Souza, he's owned in far too few leagues. And you should make that change if Burns is out there. I think we see 20-plus more steals out of him the rest of the way with relative ease. Would you guys drop, Seth, I'll start with you, would you drop Jason Hayward for Billy Burns?
I mean, if he was the only guy that you could drop, I think so.
Yeah.
Hayward is struggling. He hit a home run today, which was nice to see, but sort of looking like he's never going to live up to the hype. He's a great defensive right fielder. That's, you know, unquestioned. He will get a little bit better, but that second year, I think it was the second year in the league, just that's going to be the best season he's ever had. He's not going to hit 27 home runs again. But if he can steal some bases, boost the value. But at this point, Burns is producing, and he hasn't stopped producing. He hasn't taken a break at all from that, and Hayward struggled tremendously. I dropped Hayward in one league, too, in a smaller league. So, and I have Burns on that team, and I've kept Burns. So, yeah, I would do it if Burns somehow on the wire in your league, which, I mean, he shouldn't be at this point. Yeah, I think that if Hayward was the worst player in the team, then, yeah, I'd drop him.
Greg, are you doing the drop?
In that situation, I would. I mean, Hayward is now a platoon player. I mean, you can only use him when a right-hander is pitching. And, you know, it's going to be like the Joel Mauer year. He had that one great year, and we kept waiting for it. And I've been a Hayward fan, but, yeah, no, he's simply a platoon guy now, and Burns plays every day. And at least I know Burns is going to give me runs and steals on a consistent basis. Whereas, you know, I don't know when Hayward's going to produce. You know, trying to pick and choose his productive weeks are tough. I mean, I'd rather have the guy that's playing every day.
Fair enough. Good, because I made the drop today in the league, and I was curious about what what you guys would think. So thank you for backing me up on that one. So Manny Machado hits a home run pretty much every day. Every time I log on Twitter, I see that Machado is on yard. And, you know, he's having two homer games, and he's stealing bases, hitting for average, he's doing it all. You know, we knew this was in there, but you know, Machado just kept, you know, suffering devastating knee injury after devastating knee injury. So, Seth, I ask you, should we have seen this coming, or maybe did you see it coming out of Machado this year to this extent?
No, I didn't actually. I'll admit I was a little bit wrong on Machado. I was given a little hard time on Twitter yesterday because there was a guy that I've talked to for a few months about Machado, and he had him on a keeper team, and I was saying that I didn't expect a lot from him this year. A big part of it's been his health, and he's come back healthy, and we know what he can do. We saw a couple years ago what he can do. He's a young player. He's going to develop. I just didn't think he'd be able to put it all together so well this year. I mean, the speed, the double-digit stolen bases, 14 home runs. I think a big part of that is, for whatever reason, and, I mean, we know why, but when they moved him to the leadoff spot, that's just when he just took off. And he's not stopped hitting for power. He's not stopped on the base pass. And I think that's one thing. I never expected him to be their leadoff hitter. But, yeah, it's fun to see. He's, you know, kind of one of those guys that you forget about. And I was lucky enough to draft him in a NFBC draft champions league. I think I got him in like the eighth round, so I'm really happy right now with those results. He's been carrying me the last couple of weeks. It's great to see him healthy and hitting.
Yeah, and Machado is super young still, but he's almost like a post type guy after all those injuries, which allowed him to be quite a value pick for the people who were able to grab him. Greg, are you did you see this coming for Machado?
I didn't see it coming to this extent, but I had him higher on my draft board than I think I saw some other people. But every time I was like, all right, I'm going to get him when he comes around this time. He got, like, sniped right before me. So, you know, lesson learned, I should have just reached that round ahead because I did have faith in him. And, you know, Seth touched upon it, though. I mean, the injuries were always a concern. But in keeper leagues right now, he's looking like gold as long as he can stay on the field. You know, hitting that ballpark looks like it was just made for him. And when he hits them, they're not, you know, he's hitting them on a line. So, you know, it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and I was in on Machado every year since he got the call. And this was the first year where I kind of pushed him to the back of my mind because of the two knees. And I said, well, you know, I can do without this year. And, you know, of course, this is the year that he finally really, really breaks out. So. Nevertheless, good to see, though, and, you know, one of the game's best young players in a season where there's just too many of them to keep track of right now. So we've got about 5 minutes, and obviously we're not going to be able to get to everything, so we'll just continue on here with the hot takes, and we'll cover the last three guys here that we have on the list, and we'll plug
well,
up
actually,
a couple
hold
minutes,
on.
But,
Tim.
Sure.
Can
yeah,
I interject
yeah.
here? Well, because yeah. I know Seth is in the health realm here. I wanted to get his opinion on, Jose Fernandez struck out a bunch of guys the other night. They got him slated to come back on July 2nd. I wanted to get, we know he's coming back from Tommy John. We know he's not going to be the Jose Fernandez of old, but what does Seth think of Jose when he's going to be coming back?
Thank you for recognizing my former career. It's hard to say. I think it's going to take a bit. I think it's quite possibly going to take a few weeks for him to fully get to where we want him to be. He's going to have some good starts, but I don't expect him to be pitching sub 2 ERA right off the bat, first 3-4 starts. I think that the Marlins are going to be a lot more cautious with him than the Mets were with Matt Harvey, and there's a lot of comparisons right now because Harvey went through a real big slump for a couple weeks. The Mets are in first place. The Marlins are not. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're going to take it easy with him. But I do expect him by season's end to be pretty dominant.
Fair enough. We'll get a couple more injuries off the list here, and we'll ask you, Seth.
Go on Altuve next, because I know he's with me on this one.
All right, Altuve it is. What do you think about – actually, Altuve was in the lineup today, but any concern there with you, Seth, about the hand – oh, did they scratch him?
Yeah, he didn't play.
Okay, well, what's going on with the hammy there, Seth, then?
I'm worried about it. Hamstring injuries are real tough ones in sports in general, but for speed guys, for baseball players, even more so for outfielders, you got to let it rest. There's no other remedy than rest. You rest, you get it better, then you rehab, then you come back. I think that Altuve is going to have to go on the DL. I don't see him being able to all of a sudden just play again. And anytime you aggravate that hamstring, it's only making it worse. So when he took a few days off, came back, aggravated, right now I'm imagining that he's in more pain than he was before. The best thing for them to do, they are playing well, is to DL him now when they can afford to. Don't wait and then not have your best player, or maybe whatever. Maybe Springer's the best player, who knows. But not have your top guy there in the second half to help you, and they're going to need him in the second half. So I think he's going to go on the DL if they're smart. If they're not, for fantasy owners, it's going to be tough because he's going to be off and on games, and I don't think that's what you want when you're owning him in fantasy.
All right, last guy, Seth. Talking about rest, are we going to see Corey Dickerson again this year, you think?
Maybe. If we do, I don't think it's going to be till August, but I'm not holding my breath. Again, another guy felt they rushed back from the DL. Plantar fasciitis, not a fun thing, very painful. Again, something that you either need surgery on or you need a lot of rest. I think at this point, by rushing him back, they've made it worse. And again, last place team, I don't think they're going to have any reason to bring him back sooner than they need to at this point. They've seen the damage they did, and I don't know if we see him this year. If he opts not to get surgery, I think we do. I think maybe August, September. But if he does get surgery, yeah, he's going to be out for the season. And either way, I don't think he's back for a while. And to me, unless you just happen to have an open DL spot, he's droppable in 10-team leagues. He's pretty close to droppable in 12-team. Hold on to him in deeper than that just because there may not be options on the wire. But, yeah, he's a guy you can drop right now for sure. I don't expect him back for a while.
Seth, appreciate the time. Follow Seth on Twitter at SethTheSportsman. Check out his work at Razzball on the Fantasy Pick. For Greg and myself, we'll be back next Thursday night at 8. Follow us at TKing978. Do it 9, and check out the work on the site. Seth, appreciate you having you on. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good night, guys.